Good evening, everyone. I'm Bhikkhuni Seiri, or you can call me Venerable Seiri. I'm actually now a resident nun from a Patachara Bhikkhuni Hermitage. Seiri is a Pali word which means independent and freedom. And as Hughes has introduced, that I was ordained on the 4th of July in 2004. And you know, 4th of July is American Independence Day. And being independent and free from the cycle of assistance and to practice for the attainment of liberation, freedom, and Nirvana is my aspiration. That's why I was given the name Seiri. Tonight is my first time here on Friday night to share some reflections and teachings with all of you here. So I'm going to, first of all, to tell you a little bit more about myself. This is the exciting bit, a relaxing bit for me. I was born in Malaysia, and I came to Perth in my teens, and I completed my studies in pharmacy at Curtin University. And later, I also completed a diploma in applied science for naturopathy, nothing related to Buddhism. After my studies, I left Perth and I went to Singapore to work. I spent 3 years there, and later on, I migrated back to Perth. I love Perth, and I love Australia, and I'm proud to be an Australian. Before I went to the monastery, I worked as a pharmacist at MCAL Chemist, which is just at Morley Galleria, only 10 minutes away from here. And I also work as a naturopath at South Perth Naturopathic Clinic. And I had a house, a car, and a good career. Like you all here, I work very hard for my security, shelter and home and safety in my life. The only thing that I didn't do is to get married. Some people say that's very wise. And I even took my spiritual path seriously. I kept the 5 precepts. I was a member of BS Buddhist Society of Western Australia, and I used to be a volunteer at the library. And like you all here, I'm also one of the enthusiastic fan of the Friday night talk. So I used to regularly on Friday finish work at 5:30. From the pharmacy at Morley Galleria, as I say, only 10 minutes away from here. And I grab some dinner, rush here to the library to help at 6 o'clock, and came in here at 7:30 for the meditation and the talk. And I used the seat at the back of the hall, and so that no one could notice me. And I could sneak out of the hall anytime I wish. And that's why tonight you have my full permission. If you wish to walk out of the talk or out of the hall at any time, you have my full permission to do that. And I will not hold it against you. I promise. And I went on to pilgrimage in 2001 to India. the pilgrimage that organized by Pallini. And I met Ajahn Varma for the first time formally. Ajahn Varma was the first Theravada nun that I ever met. I must say, during the pilgrimage, I used to watch her and observe her. And I'm inspired by her behavior and conduct as a nun, by her kindness and her gentleness. I must admit that I didn't get a chance to speak to her or get to know her really well because I was one of those people who sit at the back of the bus, talk and laugh and have lots of fun. So at the time I missed the chance. During pilgrimage, I experienced a feeling of peace for the first time in my life, and I still remember on top of Boucher's Peak. It is the feeling of peace that experiences nothing can match all the excitement, the delights, the pleasant experiences I have from all my travels and my successes in my life so far at the time. Not even having coffee and tea with my family in the restaurant on top of the Twin Tower in New York just a year before it collapsed, or standing on top of Eiffel Towers in Paris, or even climbing up the Great Wall of China. It had a great impact on me, like very different from all the fun I have in Disneyland, Anaheim, or Disney World, Orlando. I love Disneyland. And after the pilgrimage, I returned to Perth. I am at the time studying part-time and doing long-distance studies at RMIT, the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Melbourne, for Chinese medicines, and at the same time working full-time. At the time, I could not decide whether I leave Perth and move to Melbourne to continue my studies or stay here. I went to Ajahn Varma for advice, like most of us do, that we don't know what to do, so we ask the nuns or the monks. I remember what she said to me very clearly, because she was the only one who said that. And this is what she said: "You have enough skills to help others. Now it is time to put effort into your practice." I was shocked with her advice, because everyone at the time was very encouraging for me. "Hey, go, continue the studies." But she was the only one to say, "Hey, enough, practice now." I actually took her advice. I resigned from South Perth Naturopathic Clinic. I withdrew from my Chinese medicine studies, and I took 6 months on pay leave, and I went to the monastery the next year. And that's the start of my monastic life. Now, enough of the interesting part of my story. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Patachara. When you heard that I sang from Patachara, Bhikkhuni Hermitage, some of you might wonder, Patachara? Yeah, what is that? Those who are traditional Buddhists will know Patachara Seth's life story really well before she joined the Sangha. But most people were not aware of her story after she ordained. Patachara was a bhikkhuni, an extraordinary bhikkhuni, a fully ordained nun during the time of the Buddha. She was one of the most powerful personalities in the early Buddhist community. She attained her enlightenment and arahat. She also being designated by the Buddha as the foremost among the bhikkhunis who are experts in the Vinaya, the monastic rules and disciplines of the bhikkhuni. Not only that, she was a skillful, revered, and much loved teacher. She has a great influence on other nuns, and she, with her experience, she helped them to train and to practice and to penetrate the Dharma and attain liberation and freedom from the cycle of rebirth. I'm going to share with you the story of Patachara. Not just that because I'm a resident nun from Patachara Bhikkhuni Hermitage, it is because I'm personally touched and inspired by her. She is indeed a great role model, especially to me. So now, this is the story of Patachara. Patachara was born into a banker's family in Savati in India. When she was a young woman, her parents arranged for her to marry a young man from the similar family background. But Patachara fell in love with one of the family servants, and she went against her family, her wishes. She ran away with him and set up a family in a remote place. You think this only happened in today's society, don't you? This is in India, more than 2,500 years ago. Later, she became pregnant, and she wanted to go home to have her parents' care during birth. But her husband was reluctant. She left one day while he was out. And the husband found out what happened and followed her and caught up with her halfway to Savati. And there labor came. She gave birth safely to their son and they returned home together. They didn't really make it to the parents' home. And later on, she conceived again with the second child. And once again, Patachara wanted to go back home. But once again, husband reluctant. You can imagine that he don't really want to face his parents-in-law. So she left again, Patachara. And she took their child with her, and the husband once again found out and followed her and caught up with her, just as her labor was beginning. But this time, a big storm rose up. Patachara needed shelter in the storm, so the husband went into the forest to cut woods and grass and to build Patachara a hut. Unfortunately, he was bitten by a poisonous snake and died. Patachara, not knowing what happened, she thought her husband abandoned her, and she gave birth alone and used her body to protect her children from the storm during the night. The next morning, she discovered her husband's body. She was paralyzed with grief. But she needed shelter, she needed security. All she could do is to resume her journey to her parents' home. halfway through her journey, she came across a river that was swollen with flood water. She was too weak to carry both of her children at once to cross the river by herself. So she took her newborn baby first to the other side of the river, put the baby down on a safe place on a pile of leaves, and she went back to the other side of the river to collect her older child. Halfway through the river, she saw this giant hawk or big eagle came down, seized her child, and carried him off. She screamed and cried in distress. Her older child thought that his mother was calling him, so he was getting very excited, ran towards the river, fell into water, and drowned. Bhattacharya was in utter despair. She lost her husband, now her sons. There's nothing she could do. So she continued her journey to her parents' home. When she came to the outskirts of Savati, she met someone from her town. So she asked him whether he knew her family. He said to her, "There was a big storm last night. Your family's home collapsed and it fell on your family. Your brother, your mother, and your father all killed in the storm." With that news, Bhattacharya totally lost it. She went out of her mind. She lost her husband, her sons in one day, and now her parents and her brother. She wanders around and around in circle. Her clothing became ragged and fell off. Her name, Bhattacharya, means cloak or rope walker, refer to this. And the people from the town drove this crazy Bhattacharya off using rubbish and sticks. One day, she came, still walking and wandering in circle, she came to Jatavana Monastery, where the Buddha was teaching. The people gathered around to listen to the Buddha's teaching, wanted to keep Bhattacharya away. But the Buddha saw Bhattacharya at the entrance of the monastery. He recognized her as one who was ripe for his teaching. He asked people to let her in. As Bhattacharya came close to the Buddha said to her, "Sister, regain your mindfulness." Imagine the Buddha said that to Bhattacharya with great compassion, kindness, wisdom, peace, and deep understanding. Bhattacharya regained her mindfulness instantly. She told the Buddha her tragic story. The Buddha replied to her, "Bhattacharya, do not trouble anymore. You have come to one that who is able to give to be your refuge in your shelter. Today is not the first time you experience calamities and disaster in your life. But throughout this endless cycle of existence, you cried over the loss of your sons and those that were dear to you. And you shed the tears more than the waters in the four oceans. No sons are there for shelter, nor father, nor related folk. For one sees by the ender, kinsmen provide no shelter. That verses you can find in Dhammapada. And the Buddha continued to give Padacara a discourse. At the end of the discourse, Padacara attained stream entry, the first stage of enlightenment. Padacara later attained enlightenment, Nibbana. As I mentioned earlier, she had a great influence on other nuns. And the poets in Terigata, that's the verses and poems of the early Buddhist nuns, that mention her more than any other women or nuns. I'm going to give you a few examples. Arahat Bhikkhuni Chanda mentioned Padacara in her verses. She guided me, encouraged me, and urged me to the highest goal. I took her advice. It wasn't wasted. And Arahat Bhikkhuni Uttama also referred to Padacara. I went to see a nun that I thought I could trust. She taught me the Dhamma. And there are 30 Arahat Bhikkhunis mentioned Padacara in their verses. They stood up, then bowed to her feet. We have taken your advice and will leave, honoring you. Because of Padacara's experience, she acquired this deep understanding of the ways of the human heart. And not only that, she used that to help other nuns in their training, in Vinaya, in the practice. Most of the nuns went to her for guidance and found great consolation in her advice. You can see that from the story of Padacara. She took impermanence as her refuge. She thought, if she could be with the one that she loved, her husband and her sons, she could live happily ever after and safe. But her husband and her sons died in one day. She lost them in a short time. Her last bit of her security, shelter and refuge in her life, her parents and her brother, killed in the storm. Very unfortunate for Padacara. However, Padacara was ripe spiritually. Because of her utter dukkha, her sufferings, and her good karma too, she met the Buddha. She penetrated the Dhamma. At the end of the first discourse by the Buddha, she attained stream entry. Padacara used the Dhamma. She held the Dhamma in her heart. She realized that she had been taken the wrong refuge in her life, the refuge that outside her own heart. However, she used the Dhamma to transcend her pain and suffering, and she attained liberation, freedom, Nibbana. I'm personally, as I say earlier, inspired and touched by the story of Bhattacharya, as well as her practices and her enlightenment experience. This is my eighth reign since I went forth as a nun, and my second reign as a bhikkhuni. I gave up all my material possession, as I mentioned, my house, my car, and my career, and the bank account as well, to be ordained. When I ordained, at the time, my family, they were really worried about my decision to ordain, because I need to give up all my security, shelter, my home, and the safety that I have accumulated in my life so far. They were concerned about how I'm going to look after myself, how I'm going to survive, because I need to give up everything, all the material possession, and I even need to give up my qualifications or as a pharmacist or naturopath. I was asked to stop my registrations, to really renounce, to really give it up. They visited the monastery. They came here. I assured them that I ordained into a well-established monastery and organization, and I will be well looked after. And the teacher will be there to guide me and support me spiritually. I'm a well-educated, independent, and mature female. But when I left the monastery a year ago, I found myself that I have no way to go, no money, and I experienced this loss of security, shelter, and refuge in my life. There are many moments that I felt lost, helplessness, disappointment, sadness, and fear. Especially fear of the uncertainty of my monastic life and my life. Fear of the future. I'm really lucky that I'm not as desperate as Bhattacharya. I'm very fortunate to have family and friends, even though they are non-Buddhists, they offer me unconditional support in my spiritual quest. And I'm extremely grateful to all those Buddhist friends and supporters for their care, for their kindness and their support, especially being there in difficult times. Tonight, I invite all of you sitting here, to reflect, to investigate your refuge and security in your own life. Do you, like Bhattacharya, take your parents, your wife, your husband, your children, or even your grandchildren as your security, safety, and refuge in your life? Do you take your qualifications, your work, your house, your car, or your latest computer, iPhone, or iPad as your security, safety, shelter, and refuge? Do you take your health, your youth, your beauty, or your strength as your security, shelter, and refuge? What do you take as your security and shelter in your life? What do you really take as your refuge in your life? If you were buried under the rubble of a building after the earthquakes in Christchurch, New Zealand, or caught in the tsunami in Japan, what was your refuge then? Do you think by being a Buddhist, coming here regularly, listen to Dharma talk and meditating regularly, can save you from the calamities and sufferings of life? Do you think by coming here tonight, you can leave all your trouble and your problems away for a few hours or even for a few minutes or a few moments? I'm afraid not tonight, because I haven't told a joke yet. And recently, there was a report in the paper about the body of an elderly man was found in his apartment that belonged to the Department of Housing in Perth City, very close to home. He was believed to be dead for 2 years. No one knew that he was dead for all this time. Not his family, his friends, his neighbors, social security services, not even the Department of Housing. What was his refuge when he was lying there, dying in his own home? What will be our refuge in difficult times when there's no one there for us except ourselves? It is only what is in our heart that matters at that time. The three refuges and the five precepts will not mean much to you until you draw them into your heart. We really need to practice the Dhamma and the teachings ourselves and put bit by bit into our life. If we would like to have more peace and ease in our life, what are the conditions and the causes that are conducive to peace and ease? Like the peace that you experienced earlier in the meditation. How do I live harmlessly? Not just harmless to myself, but harmless to the community, harmless to all beings, including the environment. How do we minimize our carbon footprint on the planet? The Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha can only point the way. We need to do the work ourselves. Otherwise, all the talks, the sharing of Dhamma, are just like another story or news item or even another joke that you repeat at the parties. Only with our willingness to put the Dhamma into practice, with our dedication, sincerity, and honesty, then we can transcend the heart, our own heart, not other people's heart, our own heart. Only then the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha will be our refuge, our true refuge, wherever we are. As I mentioned earlier, I personally inspired and touched by the story of Bhattacharya. When I feel experience the loss of security and shelter myself in my life, when I felt the fear of uncertainty in my monastic life, I really need to dig deep and really need to investigate again and again my own refuge, my faith and confidence in the Dhamma and the Sangha and the Buddha, as well as I need to find strength in the practice. There's no other way. Because of the pain of suffering that I felt in my heart, only way is to use the Dhamma, to keep on reflecting and remind myself again and again. It is only natural for all of us, for all beings, to want to be safe, to want to have security, shelter, home and refuge in our life. It is our self-preservation, the basic survival instinct that inscribed into our blood and bone. The Buddha talked about the four requisites for the monastics: the rope, food, shelter, and medicines. So only with awareness and constant investigation and reflections can we gradually weaken the grip of the self-preservation, and can we one day be free from the bondage. Bhattacharya held the Dhamma in her heart constantly. She practiced with great diligence. In her verses that describe her practice and enlightenment experience, that we see that there's a sequence of events, a period of intense concentration and practice, then relaxation after the concentration and practice, then a catalyst from outside, the going out of the lamp that sparked her breakthrough. She described in her verses that she saw her foot washing water trickling down the slope. It was just like the stream sank. Some sank quickly into the ground, some flow a little bit further, and some flow all the way down the slope to the bottom of the slope. She recognized that as a perfect metaphor of the nature of all sentient beings. Some live for a very short life, like her children. Some live into adult years, like her husband. Some live still into old age, like her parents. But eventually, all the waters and the streams disappear into the soil. none escape death. With that realization that she described in her verses of her practice and her enlightenment experience, her mind became concentrated and composed. She continued to contemplate on the condition phenomena as impermanence, suffering, non-self. But she could, in spite of her effort, she still could not make her breakthrough. We can see that the practice of the Eightfold Path of the Dhamma require persistent effort and patience. There's no shortcut or magic pill. Require the whole of our life. And coming back to Patachara's verses, when she became fatigued, tired, she retired into her room. When she then sat on her bed, just as she extinguished the oil lamp, all the momentum that she had built up through the previous practice bore fruits. She became enlightened. Nibbana. Now, I'm going to share the enlightenment, the verses of Arahat Bhikkhuni Patachara from the Theragata 112 to 116, which is the poems and verses of the early Buddhist nun. This is her verse. Plowing the field with their plows, sowing seeds upon the ground, maintaining their wives and children, young men acquire wealth. Then why, when I'm pure in virtue, practicing the Master's teaching, have I not attained Nibbana? For I am not lazy nor puffed up. Having washed the feet, I reflected upon the water. When I saw the foot water flow from the high ground down the slope, my mind became concentrated like an excellent thoroughbred steed. Having taken a lamp, I enter my cell. I inspected the bed and sat down on the couch. Then, having taken a needle, I pulled down the wick. The liberation of the mind was like the quenching of the lamp. The liberation of the mind was like the quenching of the lamp. This is the verses of Arahat Bhikkhuni Patachara from Theragata, the verses of the early Buddhist nuns. Before I finish, I would like to dedicate tonight's sharing of reflections and teachings. I would like to dedicate the merits with my teacher, Ajahn Vayama, and my preceptor, Ayatathaloka, my role models in monastic life and in Dhamma. Because of their dedication and sincerity in their practice, their sacrifices and efforts, especially in laying foundations for female monastics, I have the opportunity to be trained as a nun, to be ordained as a bhikkhuni, and to be sitting here to share the teachings with you. I share these teachings with all of you here. May these teachings help benefit all of us. May it help us all on our path of practice for the attainment of liberation, freedom, nibbana. Thank you. Do you have any questions? Sorry, yes. This is a personal issue. I will not, do not wish to to discuss it in public. Thank you. Thank you for your kindness. Please, if you wish, you can come to speak to me or give me a call. I have a number, the number for the hermitage. You can ask who is around. It should be available, Ming or Mary, who is at the reception. It's on the wall. So you can even send me an email to Ajahn Varma's email address. Then I'm happy to speak to you. Thank you. Bhikkhunis. thank you. As I have mentioned in the talk, as I say, I quite a lot of people here sitting here that I'm very grateful to all those supporters and friends. I'm very lucky and fortunate. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes. Well, any chance, I'm happy to be here if you're happy to have me here. Thank you. Yes. Yes, thank you, I would. Yes, Eddie. Well, that's something that we all need to investigate ourselves. As I say, the Buddha or the teachers can only point the way. You know in your heart whether you're doing the right thing. If you meditate and you have a quietness and in your heart you know that something's not right. I'm not doing something quite right. It will tell you. You just need to keep on asking yourself and investigate and reflect. No one can help us with that. As I have mentioned, you really need to honestly and sincerely look at it yourself.
My question was the criteria for you.
For myself?
No. For a person, like, is stillness, if you gain more stillness, does that mean you're on the money?
Yeah, sorry, when you're...
If you are getting more stillness, does that mean you're on the money? You've placed the right bet. What you're doing is working, as opposed to kidding yourself that it's working.
Well, it could be. That's the thing. That's what I mean. Even though you say stillness, you can't be just using the stillness doing something else. Or you might think that you are still. Actually, you are not. So only in actually another great guide or judge is how you behave in your daily life. If you have stillness, but after the meditation, you still break the five precepts, you're still doing things that are harmful or to yourself, let's say simple things that, you know, you meditate and be quiet, but you still drink or still break the precepts or doing things that, you know, it's not sort of not really right to what your principles or belief is. Let's say we are harmless, but we turn around, we can just go to the bush and just take off all the plants or things from the bush without thinking twice. Hey, that's the environment. They are living beings too. Do I really need to take the plants or this bush out? So that's how it reflects in our mind. If you sit still and you turn around, you went for a walk, you just pluck every flowers or grab anything that's on the road, then you know you are not really still and peaceful. You might be still then, but you still have more work to do. It's not that you are not there yet. Just know that, hey, there's more work to do. I still have some agitation and irritation in myself. So each time when you take, when you do something, after that, before you reflect, after that you reflect, then you will know, I might be doing the right thing. I'm not perfect, just as I mentioned in the talk. I still need to keep on reflecting, still feel the pain and sufferings in life, like everyone do. But gradually, bit by bit, slowly. But we need to have the awareness to be there, and the mindfulness. That's why meditation is excellent, to help us to be more aware and be mindful. But not just in the meditation, so is what we do outside the meditation. Do I answer your question? Eddie?
Sister Serena, did you say earlier that you are a natural path in full body?
Yes, I did. I do. I'm a practicing naturopath.
Oh, good, yeah. When you said that, it really hit my mind today. I came across an article I read today, yeah, on Tibetan Buddhism. Yeah. And it stated that a person's well-being, depends on five things. Okay? First thing is our mind, that's Buddhism, or mind will matter. Second thing, our karma, and previous karma affected our well-being. Third thing is food, the food we take, which I will ask you, okay? Food. Fourth thing is the climatic condition. If there's any climate change, you know, we might feel well or unwell, okay? The fifth one is spiritual disturbance. Okay? Now on food, how do you taste, like for you, your land? How do you, and many people do that, a lot of many people who have food fanatics do that. Yeah. How do you see the importance of food? I know it's important, but as a nut from your point of view.
From
your perspective?
Unfortunately, as a nun, I don't have a choice. I need to accept whatever it is offered to me gracefully, like my teacher say, we accept whatever it is being offered. But I must say, we are monastic, we are extremely lucky. All the supporters have been extremely kind. They offer their best, and with their heart, anything, whatever food it is, if it is made with kindness and from their heart, that is the best food. And after I saying that, if you are sick and you need special requirements, that is the time that we are allowed to ask. So if you are sick, you need special Thai food being prepared or nutrition, there's no restriction. Go for it. And being a lay person, you can have control of your food much more than us. But our supporters have been extremely kind and generous to offer the best to us, I must say. Any other question? So we're going to finish here. I'm going to finish by paying respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha.